Hey, Abby.
Hey, Maya.
So I've been thinking a lot about who you'd want on your team in the zombie apocalypse. You ever think about this?
No, I don't.
How do you not think about this?
I never think about this stuff. Why,
Walking Dead was a political moment. That's all I have to say about
fair,
that.
Fair.
But you know, you think about it. You're like, you're going to be trapped somewhere. You're stuck with whoever is around you. You have to get out of the city, get armed. Hopefully get medicine, you know, the ragtag team of people.
With a bunch of people you've just met or...
You've been thrown, you have no choice with who's around you, who's going to be on your team. So what is the worst team assignment you've ever been on?
Oh my God. Okay. 1993, I was working as a news reporter at City TV in Toronto, and I got a chance to move over to Much Music, the music station, because they were doing political coverage. So I was kind of brought in as political guy. And the first
the political
big event
VJ. Wow, that's amazing.
Sorry, what did you call me?
I called you what you
I was
were,
never a,
VJ
I was never a VJ. I was never
on
a VJ.
Much Music?
I was never... It's a touchy point. But anyway, so I did go with a bunch of VJs to Ottawa for our first political uncoverage of the Tory convention, the Federal Conservative Convention that year in 1993. Brian Mulroney had finally resigned, and it was the federal leadership race where Kim Campbell won, became the first female Prime Minister of Canada, lasted about 5 minutes and saw the party decimated in the following election to like two seats. But I went to do this piece of big coverage with actual VJs, Maya, like Steve Anthony and Erica M and Master T and Ed the Sock.
Ed the Sock.
Yeah,
wow.
It was actually the person was a Tory operative and not a particularly nice fellow. But so my contribution was I was writing satirical songs. And
oh my God.
Wrote a song called The Night Old Brian Finally Gave Up the Wheel. Do you want
quite
to hear
a little? Mouthful of a song.
No,
yeah,
no.
I would love to hear it.
He set
get a
out from Baycomo with his moral muffler hanging low and a spear ego strapped firmly to the hood. Admittedly, like maybe not my finest work, but I sang it on the floor of the convention surrounded by like Brian exclamation point signs after his big tribute night. And then it never aired.
That is quite a ragtag team of people to yes. produce a country music song on the floor.
Yeah, apparently all of the Backstreet Boys and Throws to Videos was fine, but my Brian Mulroney tribute was axed and censored.
It's kind of a scary thing to have to work with a group of people you neither trust nor have a great affinity for, especially down to
really
the wire.
I really like how you're shaping my relationships with my colleagues in that time. I had the utmost respect for the VJs, who were VJs, unlike me, a serious political journalist. But
I'm so glad you're not
taking
this personally.
It is. It's people maybe you've just met, or maybe you have reason to suspect, and suddenly you're all in it together.
Suddenly you got to get it done.
And find medicine. And crossbow bolts? Is that
maybe crossbow. Maybe a crossbow.
Hi, I'm Avi Lewis.
And I'm Maya Menezes. And you're listening to Change Everything, a podcast by people who are freaking out about racism, climate, and inequality, and thinking through solutions that are actually as big as the crises we face.
This episode, the NDP and the GND.
Can we get a check on those acronyms?
You want me to, I got to unpack this now? Okay. The NDP, obviously the New Democratic Party of Canada. The GND, if you happen to have just returned from a six-month holiday on the International Space Station, is the Green New Deal, this new phrase, political framing that has exploded out of the United States electoral left insurgency of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and the Young People's Movement, the Sunrise Movement, the climate activists who occupied Nancy Pelosi's office famously at the end of last year. It's a call to cut emissions in half globally, and that means rich countries like the United States and Canada leading, and to do it in a way that doesn't leave anybody behind. So with huge new social programs on the scale of interventions of the original New Deal in the 1930s, things we haven't seen in our lifetimes, like a federal jobs guarantee in the United States, Medicare for all, and big, big policies that involve a huge social transformation in the spirit of dealing with the triple crises of the climate crisis, inequality, and rising racism.
And so we've been working on a Green New Deal in Canada since way before we thought it was possible. And, mm-hmm. you know, we know this year we're heading into a very sad federal election that doesn't, we've got racism, white supremacy, climate denial, all actually, you know, topics people are discussing, debating even as valid. So it's scary.
Unbelievably.
And yet also so believably. And so we also have the launch. We launched the Pact for a Green New Deal, a massive coalition across the country, people calling for the policies we need. And this is a really incredible political moment and vehicle for political interventions this federal election. Huge organizing potential. This week we kicked off over 200 town halls coast to coast where people are imagining what a Green New Deal in Canada could look like.
It's clear the Green New Deal in Canada is clearly going mainstream. I think when we started this work some months ago, we never thought that we'd hear the phrase from federal parties of the election cycle. And now both the NDP and the Greens are actually saying the words Green New Deal and trying to claim that mantle. Now, we will get to the Green Party and the Green New Deal in a future episode, but today we're going to talk about the NDP. And our question, very simply, is can the NDP advance a version of the Green New Deal that is worthy of the name?
And to answer it, we're going to be talking to Sven Robinson. Sven Robinson is the NDP federal candidate for Burnaby North Seymour. He actually recently returned to Canada after 15 years working in the field of international public health. But before that, he was an NDP MP representing Burnaby for 25 years. He ran for federal leadership in 95 and was part of the New Politics Initiative in the early 2000s. And now he's back playing politics, playing the role of a maverick.
Once again, and of course, he's reached the pinnacle of his career as a guest on Change Everything. Sven, welcome to our humble podcast.
Exciting to be at the pinnacle.
There you go. So we are talking about the NDP and the Green New Deal on this episode. Federal leader Jagmeet Singh has been talking up the Green New Deal. It's part of his top three policy priority talking points that he's been floating around. So it's clear that it's in the conversation for the NDP in the run-up to the next election. You've been critical of the party's lack of ambition and transformative drive on climate so far, but specifically on the Green New Deal. How do you think the NDP is doing on the GND?
I'm not sure yet. I think the jury is still out on that. It's an important and positive step that that Jagmeet Singh, the leader, has said that the Green New Deal is exciting, that we it's something that we should be moving forward on, but what does it mean? That remains to be seen. I think just in the last few days, we've seen some flesh put on the bones in terms of the NDP's policy, the motion that the NDP brought before the House. And in fact, significant that they chose that subject because this is the that was the last day that the NDP could actually choose a subject to move forward on in the House of Commons before the election. And so they chose climate emergency. They spoke to the importance of transformative change, moving beyond, clearly beyond the Paris targets. So in all of those things, they're very much in accordance with the Green New Deal. I think the focus on working with labor, ensuring that there's a respectful dialogue with labor, with unions, the importance, the key importance of engagement with Indigenous peoples, all of those are obviously key elements of the Green New Deal. So if we can pull all of that together, and if we can sort of tie up a couple of important other areas which are dissonant with the Green New Deal, then I think we're going to look at something really exciting and hopefully transformative that's going to be a part of the platform going into the next election.
All right, so we've seen only one policy plank so far from the NDP. We're seeing retrofitting every home in Canada, which is great. Good, it's a great start by 2050, but do you actually believe that the party, as currently constituted, is capable of embracing the transformational politics of a Green New Deal?
I hope so. And just to be clear, I don't think the retrofitting is the only piece that's been rolled out. There have been a number of other key elements. And by the way, retrofitting 2050, I've said, look, banish the word 2050 from your vocabulary.
That's right. There was that was like that was a kind of a that was a it was a halfway there moment, right? It was the first specific policy the NDP rolled out, calling it a Green New Deal policy. Every home, not every building, and commercial buildings are a huge source of emissions, but every home in Canada sounded like a Green New Deal. And then there was like a, there was a collective groan from the Green left when they said 2050 and showed that they're kind of out of step with the urgency of this climate moment, no?
Yeah, and 2050 shouldn't be there, of course. And by the way, it wasn't just residences, Avi. If you look at the announcement, it was all buildings, not just residences. It was commercial buildings and all buildings. It's an exciting platform, a plank to a platform. And I'm hoping that as we move into the actual development of the platform, that obviously the 2050 will disappear and we'll capture that sense of urgency. But the other really important piece was 500,000 non-market housing units. And so that is transformative. There's no question about that. It's a recognition of the failure of the market. It's a recognition of the incredible importance that housing is a fundamental human right, and that's transformative. And then there are other pieces. I mean, and a key element, obviously, of the Green New Deal is the whole issue of respect for migrants, attacking the white supremacy, racism, and the NDP has, and I think Jenny Kwan in particular, as a spokesperson for the NDP, has been really outspoken on that, taking on the Liberals, for example, on that appalling policy that they smuggled into the budget bill, attacking refugee claimants and so on. So there are pieces that have come together, but what I'm hoping is that the platform will bring it all together in a way that is truly transformative. And to answer your question, Maya, is it going to happen? The jury is still out. I hope so. We've got exciting candidates across the country that are pushing hard on this. Leah Gazan in Winnipeg, Min Suk, who is not yet a candidate, but I hope will be a candidate. There are folks across the country that are pushing on this. Bob Chamberlain, who was our candidate in Nanaimo Ladysmith, in the by-election there, front and center on these issues, respected Indigenous leaders. So there's lots of us that are pushing. I think it's incredibly exciting that the Pact for the Green New Deal has come out now, that the town hall meetings are happening across the country, and hopefully the message from that will be loud and clear to the leadership that's moving on the platform.
That's a clear dynamic. I mean, you're sort of putting yourself in the posture of just kind of hoping. I assume you're lobbying behind the scenes. But the real dynamic is the question to which the party is open to social movement pressure from the left. And this is the deep issue. And it's a historic issue. You've been on the other side of this with the New Politics Initiative. I certainly have been with the Leap Manifesto. Members of my family squashed the earliest social movement intervention in the NDP, the Waffle. And the relationship between the NDP and social movement interventions is a fraught and a nasty and a difficult one. In the United States, you have the Sunrise Movement, this extraordinary youth organizing movement that occupied Nancy Pelosi's office before the end of last year. And when Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez visited that occupation and they all said Green New Deal together, that's when it all took off. We don't have anything comparable in Canada. And we have an NDP that has traditionally been hostile to social movement pressure. So how do you think social movements ought to engage with the NDP in a way that might actually have an inside-outside result that could, you know, that could turbocharge a Green New Deal, for instance?
Yeah, and of course, that's a great question. And that's the fundamental challenge that we face. And I think there's a couple of reasons why the kind of sunrise movement that's so exciting and visionary in the United States hasn't really taken off in Canada yet. A couple of things, and in terms of the relationship with the NDP, Avi, one of the things is the strength of organized labor within the NDP, which is very different, a very different dynamic from the United States, right? I mean, you don't have that powerful voice of labor at the heart of the Democratic Party, for example. I mean, they're all over the place, and building trades have been, you know, were sucking up to Trump early on in his mandate and so on, right? Appalling. And so because we have that dynamic and because of that long historic partnership with the organized labor movement. I mean, the NDP was founded, as you know, as a partnership. I mean, your grandfather was one of the key people that was part of that transformational part. But it always was a partnership between organized labor and progressive folks, including social movements. But because of the strength of organized labor within the party historically, and now when you look at organized labor, for example, a number of these issues, there's a huge amount of mistrust at the top top leadership in many cases of organized labor. We found that with the NPI. I mean, we got 40% of the vote at the convention in Winnipeg to transform the NDP.
Right. It was really a proposal to have a new party come out of a merger of the globalization movement, social movements of the moment, and the NDP.
It was. But where was the resistance coming from? It came, in massive strength, but also in numbers, from organized labor. And the convention at that time, of course, when you look at the floor of the convention, lots of those folks were voting. When I ran for the leadership of the party in 95, I ran on that kind of transformative change. I got 40% of the vote. I mean, Jim Laxer got 40. There seems to be a 40% ceiling. Rosemary Brown got 40%, but it was organized labor. And so for me, to answer your question, one of the biggest challenges that those of us that want to see the voices of social movements loud and clear and heard and respected and listened to, we've got to find a way of bringing them into the tent with the leadership of organized labor. That historic lack of trust has got to be dealt with.
But it's not only the labor question, Maya. As an organizer, I'd love to hear what you feel about whether the movement side is there for the NDP.
Certainly, there needs to be a space where social movements can be heard and respected. But I'm really curious about how you think that will happen and how that needs to happen. I mean, the party doesn't show up in frontline social justice organizing spaces at all. You know, when they do show up, it's to ask for money or relentlessly seeking volunteers for elections. And we've seen whenever a radical solution really shows up in convention, it dies on the floor of convention. And, you know, the backroom technocrats are fighting back against it relentlessly. So what do you think needs to happen to ensure that frontline social justice organizers can be heard and respected and their needs actually be brought to the forefront?
Well, you know what? I think it's a bit of a challenge to both social movements and the NDP, quite frankly, because I know that over my 25 years and talking to many colleagues, elected representatives at the federal level, provincial level, local level, territorial level, one of their concerns, one of their criticisms, frankly, is that, you know, that social movements were there, they were pushing hard and saying, look, here's our agenda, we want A, B, C, D, E. And in some cases, they engaged at the election level. In many cases, they were absent, though, quite frankly. They weren't there, right? I mean, the demands were there, but they were not there. They weren't out there pulling votes and actually, you know, lining up behind those folks that wanted to get elected to build that partnership. But then even then, and particularly after the election, they disappeared, right? And so I think there's a challenge on both sides. I think social movements have got to be prepared to get down and dirty and do the kind of nasty work of making phone calls and banging on doors and engaging in electoral politics. And at the same time, and it's just as much of a challenge, if not a greater challenge, elected folks have got to understand and respect that these are their constituents. These are the people that are on the front lines of movements that are at the core of our values, and not to distrust them, but to welcome them and to engage with them. So I think it works both ways. And the next election, in many ways, is going to be a test of how that relationship can actually develop. The platform is going to be key. What's Jagmeet's going to say? What's the party going to say? Will that build the trust that's so desperately needed to say, okay, we're with you?
I'm just a little concerned that we are kind of making these forces monolithic. I think what I'm intuiting in the latest social movement conversations in Canada is a very sophisticated analysis from the movement side about, and a real spectrum of responses to the electoral. I think this generation of activists that I've been working with in Green New Deal Coalition and at the LEAP and in other spaces understands very clearly that the time being so short and existential when we talk about the climate crisis and other crises and the rising fascism and white supremacy that we're facing, that opting out of electoral politics is not really an option for a lot of movement folks. And a lot of them are engaging in it kind of on a harm reduction framework, like we must engage, but we're not putting all of our hopes in the electoral sphere. And we are seeing, as you mentioned earlier, insurgent candidacies of social movement folks who are getting dirty and running for NDP nominations, sometimes being fought off, sometimes winning surprise victories and ending up as the candidates. So let's talk a little bit about this insurgency strategy. We've seen it in the United States with the new generation of left Democrats, who are challenging corporate Democrats and winning. AOC's story is exactly that. In Canada, we have a number of insurgent candidates who are running on platforms like you, although you don't fit the mold of a new insurgency, that is considerably to the left of the NDP's position on the political spectrum. Is the insurgent candidate model promising from where you sit as a possibility of a social movement incursion into the party, of a change of the politics and direction of the party, which I think the three of us seem to be agreeing is needed?
Yes, I think that we're seeing that, but not enough, frankly. And the Pact for the Green New Deal and the kind of the really respectful way that you're rolling it out, and I think that's terrific. I mean, you're saying, look, we're not asking people to organize around this particular manifesto, right? We're saying, here's our broad principles. Now you tell us what this should mean in your community, right? And that's exciting. And I think that has the potential. It absolutely has the potential to engage the elected representatives of the NDP. I mean, particularly as we look at, as we get closer to the election is, 5 months away, as we get closer to the election and it looks more and more like the Conservatives are coming on strong, there's no question about that. Trudeau is weak. If we have this first past the post system in which the Green Party may very well bleed votes from the NDP, which will lead to Conservative victories in too many ridings. Boy, if that doesn't galvanize and wake people up in the NDP, and I'm not talking just to hear social movements. Social movements are there. The NDP has got to be a lot more transformative. If that doesn't wake us up to say, hey, unless we really are prepared to engage with these folks and not just talk the talk, but walk the walk, we could be toast. And it's not just we could be toast. And that's the other thing. There's an arrogance to saying, well, you know, we could be toast. But the planet and everything that we fight for and believe in, our future is at risk in this. And so that's the sense of urgency that I'm looking for in the NDP. It's there in many parts of the social movements, Avi, but we haven't made the link yet.
All right. That's our time. Thanks for this. I feel like maybe next time we'll just make the subject, is the NDP ripe for a left-wing takeover by outside forces?
Well, let's hope so.
We won't leave it to the end.
Not just outside forces. There's a huge number of dedicated Democrats inside that are desperately yearning for this kind of change as well.
There's the inside-outside pincer movement we've been talking about.
That's it.
Sven, thank you so much for joining us.
Good to be with you, Avi. Thank you, and thanks, Maya.
So Maya, I felt like I could feel you hanging back a bit in the interview. Was there something you wanted to say?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple things I wanted to say. I think for me, you know, I don't know if you realize I'm actually new to podcasting.
You listen to more podcasts than I will ever listen to in my life.
Very new to interviewing people.
This side of the microphone, got it.
It's hard to, you know, it's really, I'm not good at cutting people off. I'm too trained to be polite.
I'm too good at cutting people off. Sorry.
Yes, you are very good. Well, being feminized is a heck of a thing, let me tell you.
Yeah.
Oh man, taking up space. But you know, when I had one big like full body cringe moment that I wish I'd said something faster to or had a response for.
Now is
just
your chance.
Just couldn't find my in. Now's my chance. Leave it all on the dance floor. I had a full body cringe when that comment Sven made about, we need movement organizers to get out there and like knock on doors and talk to people and show people they want to be there. Like I call a load of BS on that. Movement organizers are some of the hardest working people on the planet, unpaid people who are doing work by and for their communities, while cuts from on high are raining down on some of the most marginalized people out there. You work a day job, then you go out and you work for other people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you are running for public office, it is your job to fight for your constituents and give them a reason to come out for you. Not the other way around. Mm. So that's really what I wanted to say in a really long-winded and probably emotional response to that.
We're not in the same place for this episode, but I could feel you across the internet having feelings at that moment, and I I agree. I think it was there. But both side-isms when you're talking about a political party that, you know, was born out of social movements in the 1930s and has lost that connection.
And I mean, really speaking about, you know, born out of social movements, it made me think a little bit about what you were saying about the Green New Deal really surfacing to NDPs.
Yeah, this question of the NDP's sort of constitutional centering of trade unions and the way the NDP was formed in the late 60s as a modern Labour Party, as a formal merger, a rebirth of the CCF, the Cooperative Commonwealth Federation that preceded it, formally merging with the trade union movement to make a modern Labour Party. And Sven's, I think, helpful insight about the, although he didn't really say it this way, he started talking about the centrality of trade unions in the NDP when we were talking about the resistance to social movement input and intervention. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, we felt this in our bones and in our skin at the Leap when we launched the Leap Manifesto in 2015 and at the Edmonton Convention in 2016. There are two NDPs, and I've been feeling this more and more over the years. There is an environmental left in Canada. It doesn't all vote NDP. Some people vote Green. Some people vote. Some people don't vote. Some people vote strategically with the old party. Not parties. I don't think the environmental left ever votes Conservative, but you know, it drifts around. But in particularly in major cities in Canada, there are people who are really, really terrified of the climate crisis now, who are really connecting the dots with other social crises like rising white supremacy and the staggering levels of inequality that we now see, who don't buy the crap that this is actually a great economy. It's not great for everyone. It's great for very few people. And people who care about environmental issues are really coming into that. And that's a very promising space. And that is a big constituency for the NDP. But there is also another NDP, the extractivist left, like really, which is the dominant model in Latin America in those petro-socialist states like Venezuela and the Pink Tide in Bolivia. You know, there's I grew up in this, you know, like the first songs I ever learned were coal miner songs because the birth of the electoral left in North America came out of trade unionism, came out of working class struggles that were in the extractive sectors. So there are strong extractivist NDPers, and that mindset is huge. And I think it's a real divide that needs to be acknowledged, and there needs to be an answer for communities that are in that are post-extractive economies. What does the Green New Deal look like in Thunder Bay, in resource communities where those jobs have basically gone and they're never going to return at their peak? And yet the mindset is still that real jobs and real workers are guys, and they're always guys in hard hats ripping stuff out of the ground. Like, we need to shift away from that whole mindset, and it is still a big constituency for the NDP. The Green New Deal, I think, is an offer if we can start articulating how we shift our economy and the basis of it to those communities, because we need another economy in all parts of the land. So the NDP has an opportunity there, but it's a split.
Yeah, it is a split. And I think that when we're thinking about the can the NDP get the Green New Deal out of the green climate box is a really big thing. Like, yes, no worker left behind. But we also were thinking about, like, which communities are traditionally not even thought of as within the climate frame. Mm-hmm. I'm speaking, of course, about migrants, refugees, newcomers. I'm talking about racialized communities, poor people. These are folks, when we think about those struggles, we don't think of climate issues, but they absolutely are. And if we're talking about providing people with transition work, training, supports, we have to think about the communities that are being hammered by cuts. And the communities that actually need to be centered when we reimagine what a new economy could look like.
Right on.
And so I was, you know, when I was listening to Sven, and he didn't mention migrants, but I didn't hear a lot about all these other communities that we're actually trying to center. When I'm watching the Pact for a Green New Deal launch and the town halls are happening, everyone's trying to figure out, you know, how do we make sure that marginalized communities, from Indigenous communities to racialized folks to poor folks, are actually held at the heart of this possible document, right?
Yeah, not just participating, but leading.
Exactly, because they always have been leading. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and we don't want to reframe a loss as a win. We do that all the time in climate work. Mm-hmm. But this time, if we actually leave anyone behind, then they will be left behind for good. We don't have time to renegotiate who is deserving of humanity and who is not.
This for me gets to a huge challenge for the NDP, but anyone in the Green New Deal space, anyone entering this space, is that we hear a lot of easy objections, and I think we're all hearing them now, those of us who are working on this frame, like it's a great idea or it sounds great, but we have to see what it really looks like and put the flesh on the bones and like really hear the specifics. I don't think that's the problem. I don't think that's why people are having trouble grasping it. I think it's an enormous idea that is actually about reversing half a century of austerity and neoliberalism on an emergency basis and actually creating an economy in this massive transition that we are being forced to make because of the climate crisis, an economy that runs on a totally different set of values and actually prioritizes a different set of constituencies, i.e. the majority and people who have a really shitty, precarious life in this economy, which is basically everybody except the hoarding class at the very top, for whom the wealth just flows upward endlessly and never trickles back down. And I think it's an opportunity for the NDP and for the Green New Deal generally to embrace the bigness of this is an anti-austerity program, the likes of which we have never experienced, and it can bring movements together in a massive shift the way nothing else ever has. But I think we're all struggling with the bigness.
Yeah. And I want to hear the words anti-austerity in every way that people are speaking and referring to the Green New Deal. And when we think about the people that are like really have a deep understanding about the long-term impacts on austerity for climate justice, for racial justice, for the movement for equity, it's millennials, it's young people. And that's a really significant thing for this federal election. You know, this is the first federal election where every single millennial is eligible to vote. I want to see the NDP like show up for youth in a meaningful way instead of peddling to the upper middle center. It, you know, at a time when the biggest voting bloc in the country is ready and mobilizing, give them a reason to come out for you. Mm-hmm. Like, now is the time. These, we understand better than any other generation what long-term impacts of austerity have on people. We're living through it. And so I kind of, going back to this, you know, major question, Abby, you know, what do you think? Can the NDP advance a version of the Green New Deal that's worthy of the name?
It's terrible when you set a podcast question and then someone's got to answer it, right? I honestly, on the basis of the facts and history, probably not. I don't think the NDP has shown in its repeated rebuffing of social movement interventions over history that we talked a little bit about with Sven, that it's likely to. But I will say that it seemed the Jagmeet Singh's, the federal leader's use of the phrase and putting it in the center of his policy agenda, I understand, or I think it came from him. I think that the NDP is more influenceable than I've seen it in a very long time. They seem to be trying to get it right. And I think, as Sven said, a lot rides on the policy. Whoever those people are who are working on the NDP's version of the Green New Deal, it's going to be looked at very, very closely by people who are doing grassroots organizing from coast to coast to coast. And it is a consequential thing what they put in there and how big and ambitious and radical it is. And so I think it's still contested, but I don't think history suggests that the NDP is likely to find the ambition and the radicalism in this moment that is required. But I'm going to choose to hope for now because the alternative is worse. What about you?
I'm cautiously optimistic and looking hopefully towards certain candidates. But, you know, within that cautiously optimistic, I'm ready to fight for it.
Oh, I like it. Cautiously optimistic and ready to fight. That's so much better than choosing to hope. Thank you for that.
No problem. So, who needs to be in the NDP bunker so that they can become a zombie apocalypse survival team that we can actually be proud of? Mm-hmm. Or who will it, you know, least fight to save all of us altogether? You know, there's some radical, exciting candidates who are running for the NDP. People like Minsuk Lee in Toronto Danforth, Leah Gazan in Winnipeg Centre, Matthew Green in Hamilton Centre, and recently, Paul Taylor in Parkdale High Park. So if you know any other rad candidates who are all aboard on the Green New Deal, drop us a note at media@theleap.org.
I know who I want on the team. Alan Girth.
Alan Girth.
Okay, Alan might not be famous, but he was our very first Patreon supporter. And he now has 3 crossbow-wielding comrades on Patreon. We could really use you on the team, too.
And, you know, speaking of bunkers, we actually recorded this episode of Change Everything in our respective living rooms. We're trying to cut costs and we really want to keep doing this podcast. So come out and support us.
If you've enjoyed Change Everything, please support us at patreon.com/changeeverything. We're building a beautiful bunker and we want to spend the apocalypse in it with you. So become a monthly supporter and buy us a solar lamp.
This episode of Change Everything was project managed by Rajiv Sikora and edited and mixed by Jeremy Kessler. Our theme music is by Aluma Music.
Thank you to Sven Robinson for being a good sport and getting teased from the left for once. Also, special thanks to Andrew Peters and to The Leap's Jody Chan.